Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey, everybody. On today's episode of the Nerd Nest podcast, we talk extensively about the fantastic games that just came out last week. I already thought that 2023 was one of the best years in gaming ever. And then Nintendo just dropped Super Mario Brothers Wonder. Insomniac just dropped Spider-Man 2 on the PS5. We've got Alan Wake 2 coming out, I think, next week. There's so many good games this year that like in a couple of episodes, we'll probably be doing our game of the year discussion. And when we do that, it's going to be tough for us to decide which are our favorite games for the year. I know for me, I keep going back and forth between a couple of them. So we're not talking about all the games this year, though. Today on this episode, we're just talking about the games from October. We also take a look at the Analog 3D, which is really interesting emulation hardware that we're going to dive into. And then we, of course, it's October, so we got to talk about our favorite scary games. So if all that sounds good to you, then let's get started. Well, let's just jump right into it. And I want to start by talking about, like, we've got these ridiculous releases happening in October. We just had last week, or maybe this week, whenever, we had Spider-Man 2, we had Super Mario Wonder. Next week, we have Alan Wake 2, which I don't know about you guys, but I'm super pumped for. But let's just start by talking about the games that we've been playing. I have been playing Super Mario Wonder. Russ, in the pre-show stuff, we were talking, you were just mentioning Super Mario Wonder. What's your take with that game so far, and how long you've been playing it for?
Yeah, well, officially I've been playing it since it released, but also it was available before then, so I did a little bit of testing. I mean, you kind of gotta give me a break because my cat died last week, and I was like, I really need something like to pick me up, you know, and so that game really, really helped. But anyway, so I've been playing it for a while. I'm not super far in it, and that's actually one of the best things about it is that there is no time limit in the game. So I just jump into a level and just take my time, kind of walk around, be like, oh, where does this go? What does this do? You know what I mean? Usually when you're playing like Mario 1 or Mario 3 and there's that time limit, you're just kind of like, okay, I got to go faster because the faster I finish the game, the more points I'll get, even though the points don't mean anything, you know? And so I've always kind of had that little bit of stress when I'm playing a traditional Mario game, and that's not there in this one. So that's amazing. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, really quick. Did you dislike Super Luigi U then? The Luigi one where it was like a minute and a half timer?
Yeah, never even played it.
Yeah, okay.
Because I was like, I don't want to make Mario harder. You know, like that's not a thing for me. And so, I never even played it. I never got... It's the weirdest thing is that I haven't beat a Mario game since Mario 3. Like, it's been that long. Because I never get that far into it. It just gets harder and harder and more stressful. And there's this point where I'm just like... I'm going to go back and play World 1 again because I like the repetitive kind of feel of playing a game sometimes, that exploratory feeling.
It's like a comfort
this one definitely
too.
Has it. Yeah, and the other thing is Mario 2 is my favorite game, Mario Brothers 2, because you get to pick your different characters, so they all have a different feel to them, and there's all these interesting mechanics to it. Like, you get into a level, you have no idea. You're going to pick your character. You have no idea if that's going to be a good character for that level. You're just kind of guessing, right? And you never know where you're going to end up and how you're going to have to get to wherever you're going to need. There's some really similarities between Super Mario Wonder and Mario 2 as well. Like the fact that they have those, I don't know the names of anything, but in Mario 2,
badges?
You have like the potion.
Yeah, the badges.
Like a potion thing where you go to another world, like a dark world. You know what I mean? And this one, you have that. Also, you have the little flower thing that'll take you to another world, and it's a whole other dynamic in the same level. And so there's just these little things that, to me, are parallels between Mario 2 more so than any of the others. I know everyone says it's like Mario World. I don't see that. For me, it's more like Mario 2. And so I've been really enjoying that.
Yeah, so both seem good on hallucinogenics. Right.
There you have it. So the first off, I really like the comparison with Super Mario 2, which is a game that everybody gives crap to, but I always adored. I thought that game was fantastic. You know, you've got the different characters and they all have their own powers, but in this one, everybody plays exactly the same with the exception of Nabbit and somebody else who are basically impervious to anything like that. So your little kids can enjoy the game along with you. But everybody plays the same, but you get all of that customization back through the badges system. So I really like that. Have you guys found like a favorite badge that you've been sticking with so far, Russ?
No, I'm not super far in the game. I only have like 3 or 4 badges. I've just been sticking with the parachute one just because it can help me in a pinch. You know, I've been really enjoying that. So
yeah, and I like the other reason I like the parachute one is because you can kind of get to places you're not supposed to get to. Mm. And I like the reactions that the little flowers give, like, hey, you can come here.
Stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I love those guys. I know there's like a way you can turn them off. I'm like, I would never turn those guys off. Like, I love hearing what they have to say.
Yeah, they're very supportive.
Yeah,
they are. And they give you clues, too. You know, so like if you're not like sometimes you're not sure what to do, you can get like a little hint. Like there was an area in the background and I didn't even notice it until I came across one of the flower guys and he was like, I wonder how you get back there. And I was like, back there. And I stopped and looked and I was like, oh, there is a thing back there. Let me go try all of the little warp pipes and see if any of them take me back there. One of them did. Yeah. I went and got a thing, like the purple star, which is like, if you're comparing to this to Super Mario World, it's like the Yoshi coins that you collect, or if you've gone all the way through the game, then the princess coins. So I went back there, got that, and then when I came back, he was like, so you can get back there. And I was like, that was really cool. As far as the badges, I really like the parachute badge too. Although I have been changing things up. If you're on the badge screen and you hit the L button, the prince, I don't know, I skipped over the story stuff and just pressed X to get past it, but the prince will pick one for you just at random. So you can do different stuff. So like, there's one badge where you can have like, do you remember in Super Mario World the exclamation point blocks that you would that you could hit those and it would unlock like the red ones and then the blue ones or whatever? You can get those as well. And there was like a level that I was on where a bunch of thwomps were coming down and the blocks blocked the thwomps from hitting me.
That's amazing.
And I never would have picked that as a choice. Yeah. But because I just hit random, I ended up getting to do that, which I thought was really cool.
So it's like procedurally generated.
Almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been playing it. And so, Russ, you've been playing exclusively emulated, it sounds like?
Back and forth. You know, I just made a video about it, and so I was showing a little bit of it. But my save game is in emulation, and so I've been moving that across platforms and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to say I didn't want to set up emulation because it was just I'm in the middle of like 3 different videos, right? And so I just didn't feel like I had the time to set up what I wanted to set up. So I just started playing it on the Switch, and it's the first time I've really been playing on the Switch since the Steam Deck came out. And so it prompted me, because my hands do cramp up a little bit on just the regular Switch. It did prompt me to buy a Nitro Deck, so it's on the way.
Oh, like, that's
all
nice.
All the marketing that they've been doing heavily on that thing, like I'm like, all right, let me try it, let me see if it works for me. So I did like next day delivery on the Nitro Deck, but I've been enjoying the game. I like that. Have you noticed that like if you don't get everything, it doesn't give you like the little check mark on the on the map screen? So I'm a little bit of a completionist sometimes, and so like those things bug me, so I go back and try to get the check mark. So kind of like you, Russ, I haven't gotten too far. Some of that is just me going back to play levels I already did. I like the like, I didn't even think about alternate exits. until I found one, and I'm like, oh, right, alternate exits. So, yeah, it's been fun to get back into Mario.
Yeah, you know, if you read about the development of the game, I was going to say, we read about the development of the game, they talk about how the developers were not given a deadline. They were just like, create, you know, and they did. And I think that's part of that, you know. And so I really love it. There's a part with those little flower guys, the very first level. I played it a bunch when I was working on my video, so I kind of like, I noticed the little things. And it says, oh, that Goomba is sleeping so peacefully. And then if you kill the Goomba, he goes, well then. That's all he says. You know what I mean? And it's just like, it's this little thing in the very first level. And it's just those little touches are so nice.
I noticed while I was playing yesterday, I have a little bit of an aversion to like bumping the Goombas in this game. I don't know what it is. Like I bump all the Goombas, so this is new to me. This is uncharted territory. But for some reason, I have a little bit of aversion, and I'm playing a little bit pacifist in this game. And maybe it's because there's so much more personality.
Right. You know, it's the thing is, like, if you look at the Goombas in, like, Mario World, those guys are jerks. Like, they see you and they come for you. You know what I mean? These ones, they're just kind of living their lives. Like, you don't need to murder them, you know? Yeah, so
that's it.
I have no problem murdering the Goombas, even a little. I like the new Goombas that have, like, a shell, and you have to, like, hit him once to get rid of that shell, and then you got to hit him the second time. I like the way that they look. Like, they look really cool. And everything in this game looks alive and fantastic, and my God, they should have done this years ago to the Mario franchise. It's just so different, and like even the jump sounds different. It's just it's really, really amazing. I got half the badges, almost half the badges, so I've been playing a ton. And, you know, Rich, you talked about comfort. Oh, man. My pro controller had drift, so I ended up, like, chucking it because it wasn't connecting. And when it did connect, there was drift because I had it since I bought the Switch. So I ended up chucking it, and I haven't bought a new one because I haven't been playing any Switch games except for Tears of the Kingdom, which I didn't really feel that, like, it didn't really bother me all that much. But with this game, I am getting hardcore cramps in my hands when I'm playing it, and I need to either pick up a new pro controller or that thing. But at the same time, like, we're at the end of the Switch's life cycle, and I don't want to spend that money on this thing that I'm going to use for this game, and I probably will never play again. I don't know what else Nintendo has planned, but I know that I'll just end up getting the next Switch, and so I feel like I'm throwing money away by buying an accessory for my Switch that I 100% guarantee won't work with whatever Nintendo brings out next. So I don't know. Carrie, I know that you haven't been super hyped for this because you prefer 3D Mario, if I'm remembering correctly, to 2D Mario. Have you played Super Mario Wonder yet?
Nope, haven't played it yet. I will play it eventually someday, but I don't have any particular drive to play it at the given moment. I see different people on Twitter like sharing different things. Like there's one guy just speedrunning a level by jumping on bubbles. Apparently people didn't know that you could do it. And it looked pretty obvious from my point of view, but I haven't played it. So there's just like little things from there. But for me, like when I look at Mario Wonder, the only thing I get from it, especially from the early trailers, is I would probably say like the secret sauce that Nintendo does is they've been doing it forever, but they sweat the little details, and the little details are what I think a lot of people wind up liking. Like Russ mentioned, like the well then, like it's the, it's just a tiny little thing that would have been easily missed, but it's just this correlation between what you're doing and how the game is reacting. But even when you look at Mario Wonder, the game looks absolutely fantastic, even though the Switch is a low-power device. You look at every Nintendo game, Luigi's Mansion 3 that came out, right?
Gorgeous.
Like, that looks amazing on the Switch. Yep. And it's like, these guys are going the next level of just tuning, mapping every little bit that they can. They're like, well, this is almost a free performance thing, right? Like, it doesn't cost us anything. But if we do our work and we just go and max out how MIT mapping works on and how that looks. And just spending the time, I think, is like the secret sauce that Nintendo has. And it's probably exemplified basically just listening to what you guys are saying. So I'm probably going to enjoy it when it comes out. But the only game I've been playing has been Spider-Man 2.
Which we will definitely be talking about very shortly, because I do want to talk about that. But one thing that I wanted to mention about Mario Wonder is something that I know that Russ, there's no way that Russ has experienced this yet because he's been playing it emulated. And I talked to Rich, and Rich, you said that you have not tried the online mode. Mm-mm. Okay, no. So the online mode is really cool. Like, I am very shocked that Nintendo, first off, they are notorious for being bad at everything internet. This is a very interesting way to handle online multiplayer with a platformer. So, first off, I have not played with friends yet. I've just been playing it with, like, randoms. So when you're playing the game, you can go to, like, you can just bring up your map screen or your start button, and you can say, go ahead and connect. And then the next time that you go into a level, there's going to be other people there, and they're, like, semi-transparent, and you can see them, like, moving around and doing stuff. And if they squat down and they press the duck button, and they press, I think it's X, it doesn't matter, you press a button, they'll leave behind this little stand up, like a cardboard stand up of their character, and it's in a shadow, like it's blacked out, almost like it's turned around, and you're just looking at the black silhouette of this cardboard cutout. And if you get killed, you turn into a ghost, and you have 5 seconds or something to either have another player rescue you. So, like, when you're playing, you can see other ghosts, and they'll be screaming, help me, help me, help me. And you can just go touch that ghost and it comes back, which is cool. But if nobody's around and you're playing online, then there will be little cardboard cutouts. And if you have touched it once before, it'll go from being this black cutout to being, like, you know, Mario or Peach or Yoshi. And you can see, like, the character. And if you can ghost swim back to that, it'll revive you. And then that player gets, like, credit for saving people. It's really cool.
That is cool.
And then there's this other thing where sometimes when you're playing and you get to the end, it'll say in the bottom left, it'll be like, Toad, Blue Toad got to the end or finished the level or something. And sometimes I finish the level and I haven't figured out what this is or how this works yet, but somebody, they'll be not transparent and they'll get on, like, the flagpole at the end of the level with me, and it'll be like, everybody got to the end together. And I'm like, I'm not sure how that is working. Is there some kind of weird online magic that Nintendo's doing here, which is not something I thought I would ever say because they're so bad at it. But if you obviously, Russ, because you're playing it emulated, you'd have to, like, you'd lose your save if you booted it up on your Switch, so you can't do that. But Rich, you got to try it. It's really cool.
I will. Yeah, that sounds really fun. And I know I haven't played with the kids yet, but I know my two kids, they've been playing multiplayer together and they seem to be enjoying that. Mm. So yeah, it seems like they delivered on all fronts.
Yeah, my oldest son, he's really into, like, difficult games right now. He's, like, going through and 100%ing Celeste right now. I mean, he's just crazy about that stuff. And
awesome.
I had taken the cartridge hostage up until last night because I was making my video about it. But I gave it to him. I was like, hey, here it is. And he like, stayed up late and then, like, went to sleep and then woke up early. And he's just been playing it the whole time. And so he's probably going to beat it today. Like, he's just really into it right now, which is awesome.
That's great.
Gamer cred.
Yeah.
Gamer cred. Russ, yeah. Something before we move on, something that reminds me of is that, like, you said you haven't beat Mario's. But I will say, like, a lot of the Mario's between since Mario 3 and now, like, I feel like they have two different endings, right? So, like, I feel like you're a great candidate for the first ending of all the Mario's, right? Like, you make it to the first end and it's okay. Like, you've done all the like major content, most of it is approachable, and they give you, like, a proper ending, right? But then after that is when, like, all right, you put the kids to bed. It's like, it's time for some, like, hardcore Mario time.
Yeah.
So that's the stuff that I enjoy, and maybe what your son enjoys. But
yeah, I would just watch that on YouTube if I wanted to see the alternative ending.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
there's also, you know, another thing that I really like about this one is that the levels have star ratings that tell you how hard they are. So,
I like that.
You know, Russ, who doesn't want to do the hard ones, he could be, oh, 5-star? F that. I'm out of here. I'm just going to go do a couple of 1-star ones, get enough wonder seeds or whatever they're called to unlock the boss room.
So the thing is about that is actually when I see that it's got a lot of stars, I'm like, let's try it. You know what I mean? Because if I die, it's fine. It was supposed to be hard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas when you're playing other games, you have no idea what you're getting yourself into. And so I actually really do appreciate that because it gives me a feeling of like satisfaction. Like, for example, if I just beat a game or beat a level that has 4 stars, I feel good about it. Even if I didn't 100% it, I still did enough. You know what I mean? Then I can move on. Yep. You know what I mean? And so that's actually been really helpful for me.
Awesome. Well, let's, you know, Carrie set us up for a segue, but I wasn't ready for it. But Carrie, you've been playing Spider-Man 2. My son's been playing Spider-Man 2. I have not played it yet. I'm looking forward. Well, I'm not super excited for Spider-Man 2, only because, like, it's just button mashy. It's a very button mashy. Like, I don't like the combat very much, and I know that everybody else does, so I know that I'm in the minority, but take it away. Tell us about Spider-Man 2, because I've heard nothing but good things.
So I played the original Spider-Man and Spider-Man Miles Morales, and it more or less kind of follows that same thing, but because it's PS5 only, they've been able to beef it up a bunch. When you're going through stuff, I would say that it doesn't become immediately apparent the upgrades that they've done. Like, you can see it if you just stop and look. But when you're going through things, I wouldn't say that the graphic fidelity is immediately noticeable. I don't really notice it unless I stop. So I want to just say that because while it does have that, it still feels like Spider-Man. The parry system that is in Spider-Man 2 makes combat a little bit easier. I am playing on Spectacular difficulty, which I believe is the hardest that you can initially do from the onset. And there's difficulty that's there. Basically, you basically can get hit like 3 times and then you're dead. But because of the spider sense, like, you just have to hit a button, either parry or dodge, when you see your spider sense turn red. So it's fairly easy combat wise and then as I've been leveling up pretty fast. I think I'm like, save wise, I'm like 20% done with the game. So for the most part, in my own personal scoring method, I would probably say it's like an 8 out of 10. But then again, it starts off very strong and then kind of like meanders wherever it's going right now. Like, it's building up the story and there's just some parts that I'm just not really like caring about. Like, it's like you're with Harry and you're biking and it's just like trying to tell this story where I'm not a huge, I like Spider-Man, but I guess I'm not a big Spider-Man head where I'm like enjoying, if this was almost as like a comic book read through, like you're getting to the exposition and all the other stuff. It's very slow. And some of the missions that I'm playing, some of the things that they've done just to like the variety, the spice of the game, so you're not doing the same thing over and over again. Some of them are kind of cool. Other ones where you're just like, what is the word for it? It's an Easter egg hunt, scavenger hunt, is basically what it does come to. So you're in an area and you just do a mini scavenger hunt for stuff. And it's just mostly a waste of time because you're like, well, where is it? And it's like on the side of a building and you can immediately see where it is just by doing this like focus thing. So you press in R3 and it kind of broadcasts out your spider sense. And it's not very fun. So I think they're called like EMF. There's just like things there. So like right now I'm in a bad pitch of where Spider-Man 2 is. So I think I'm kind of like in a whatever space for Spider-Man 2. Overall, it's fun. The web gliding part, I think has been the best inclusion for Spider-Man, because just like swinging around, I always felt was like not fast enough for me. And after you've been doing it for a while, you're like, just let me get to this spot. And I feel like web gliding has been such a great thing where I'll just like do this big swing and then start web gliding to get where I want to get to faster. And you can see the air current. So the sense of speed and traveling around is much, much faster. Mm. So that whole part I've been loving about Spider-Man 2. But it's it's pretty much more of the same so far, and I'm just waiting for to get to a bit of a crescendo at the moment. I'm in a bit of a lull spot where I'm kind of doing some things from a game design standpoint where they're just trying to add variety, and I think it's a miss in some spaces, not all of them. Just in some spaces. I don't know how much it's still early on, so I don't know if it's a spoiler, but like, you know, like you have your little web crawler guy that you're going through his little
spot. Oh, like the robot?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So that happens again. So there's just things that I guess that are what you would expect. And it's just more of the same.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So more of the same seems like what a lot of people want. What were you going to say, Rich?
Exactly that, right? So when we were talking about comfort games, Spider-Man was one of those for me, right? Like, I didn't mind the lack of difficulty, let's say, in a combat. I felt like there was a rhythm to it that just made it, like, I could kind of drone out and just enjoy the rhythm of it, and then, you know, come back to like the story parts and things like that, and also those different like side challenges. I enjoyed all of them, at least in Spider-Man and Miles Morales. So I enjoyed those scavenger hunts. I think I had turned something off or something on or something to make it a little more difficult, but it reminded me, when I was in those scavenger hunts, it reminded me of like Crackdown, right? Like finding the orb, and that was always fun to me.
I think Crackdown broke me. I will say, because I did get all 500 agility orbs.
Oh my gosh,
it was so good.
I had 498 of them, and then I got, like, I did it like by myself.
Yeah,
and then I had 498. I'm like, I'm only missing two. Let me get a map. And then I went through the entire thing, like X-ing out the ones I did. And after I got the last two, I was like, don't think I'm ever going to do this ever again, just for an achievement or whatever. Yeah. Like, it was something that I was just like, I got so burnt out from that. It also, like, World of Warcraft burned me out on grinding. If I ever get like a whiff of like a repetitive thing to just do whatever, I immediately get turned off and I just don't want to do it anymore. Even though the combat is like easier, I still love it. I don't want to say that it's I would say that it's still not as good as Batman Arkham Knight was, because Batman, I feel, still like has a better punctuation of like each hit, right? Like, there's just like this like audible cue and everything else that I think Batman still does a little bit better than Insomniac Spider-Man. However, the variety of everything that you can do, and then switching between Miles and Peter Parker and their different abilities, the flow that you're talking about, there's almost like a creativity to it. Like, you're like, I'm going to dispatch them in this manner. And it's like, you know, just like web flipping them up and getting them up and then getting the power up so that you can then swing them around, and also doing to the brutes and stuff. That type of stuff I really enjoy. So the combat side of it, even though it's relatively simple and it become a little bit easier with the parry system, that's not a knock on the game. I'm just saying that that's still I probably find myself, if I see a crime happening, I will make a beeline to it, just because I'm like, I feel like having some combat right now, as opposed to some of the other stuff that's going on there. So yeah, I mean, I've been playing through it, but right now my time has been just atrocious lately. So I've been like, kind of like pushing myself. I'm like, I gotta just play a game. So I've been pushing myself into Spider-Man 2 whenever I have a free moment. And really right now I'm waiting to just get into the crescendo part of it, like where where we're going to start building back up. But the beginning scene, which I think everyone's seen, the Sandman scene, is a phenomenal intro to a game. I think the only part that I would say is a negative, and this is a personal thing for me, I am so opposed to tutorials at all. Like, if it just says, like, if it just, like, pauses and slows down the game, it's like, press X to attack. And I'm like, all right, yeah, I think I could figure out a simple button. Like, just let me fail. Like, all right, like, you know, press X to jump, press square to attack. And I'm like, goodness gracious, guys. Like, yes, I realize that I can do that. Like, you don't have to slow everything down. Just have a tooltip while something is happening. But this, like, constant speed bump that they just pushed in, I felt like is a negative. That is, like, there's just so much stuff happening, and you're like, want to be enthralled in it. And it's just like, look at all this climax, but wait, hold on, hold down L1 and then press X. Okay, go ahead.
I don't want to set you off on another tangent, but I'm curious, how do you feel about holding a button to confirm something, like waiting for the
that whole mechanic that they've entered into. I don't know why game devs have gotten into that whole thing, but it seems like all of them have universally agreed to, like, hold to confirm. When did that start? Like, could you find the origin of when that, like, really started happening in every game dev? Like, yeah, that's a good thing that we should do that.
I think you could. I think it was like mid to late last generation. I can't pinpoint it right now.
I think it started with, like, when you had to buy something, or when you had to, like, use experience points, like when it was an actual, like, consequential action. But now it's just, like, for anything, they just want to kind of slow the pacing down.
Open a chest, you have to hold the button. Yeah,
right.
I was thinking of Final Fantasy VII Remake. Like, if you want to open a door, you walk up, you hold triangle for a long time. And I'm like, part of me is like, did they do this to add 4 seconds to gameplay so they could say that they have this much time? You know, we put 4,000 doors in this game. Each one's 4 seconds. Divide that by, that's an extra hour or something, you know? And it drives me crazy.
I feel like it's to imply labor.
I mean, that makes sense, but I don't need that. Right. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
That's one thing that they actually do in Spider-Man 2 that I am on the fence about. So, like, there's, like, a marker, right? And you're getting to it to start a mission. There's, like, two different things to it. And I feel like I'm getting whiplash between both of them. You know those tech stashes that they have where you can just, like, press triangle or square to, like, open up the thing to get spare part, the tech parts or whatever? You have to stand directly in front of it instead of being anywhere around it, and then wait for, like, the little button to, like, highlight. I always hate that because, like, come on, just let me get the thing. And then they have the other side of it where if there's a mission marker, if you're, like, 20 meters away from it or whatever it is, you don't even have to be, like, on it. It will just immediately start the mission. So you don't even have to press a button. You just go near it, and it just starts you into it, which is it's a weird whiplash between the two different ones where it's like, just do the thing and wait, hold on. I was just near there. I wasn't going there. I was actually going to the crime scene that I was swinging by, but it actually just started me into the mission. So that's, like, a weird juxtaposition that I'm still trying to wrap my head around. So whenever I see a mission marker, I'll, like, give it a wide berth if I'm trying to go to somewhere else, because it will auto initiate a mission if you're just within a general proximity of where it needs to start.
I would really like to see, as, like, a way to fix that, is because I ran into this in Forza Horizon 5, is when I wanted to go start a race, I would accidentally, like, drive, like, I wouldn't hit the brakes hard enough, and I'd drive past the point where you had to be, like, within this radius in order to start it. So what would be the best way to handle that, in my opinion, is as you drive by a thing or swing, if you're Spider-Man or whatever, just have it go into a list, kind of like in Diablo 3 when you were using a controller and you looted stuff. It went into a list in the bottom right corner, bottom left corner, and you could just use your D-pad to go through that list real quick and say, I want to do that, I want to do that, I want to do that. Just have that happen as you swing by or as you go up to a chest or when you drive by a thing in Forza. All of that would be better than trying to make sure that your character is standing in the exact right spot or accidentally triggering stuff that you don't actually want to trigger. Russ, have you been playing Spider-Man? Because I know that Rich and I haven't yet.
No, I have not. I'm two thoughts, right? Number one is that Spider-Man, the first one, wasn't a great fit for me. Part of that has to do with Crackdown, because I did the same thing where I tried to get all the agility orbs, and then I had a red ring of death, and I lost my save game. And so, like, I never went back, and I was just kind of, you know, feeling bad about that. But so I've always been really kind of apprehensive about those types of games. Like, for example, with the first Spider-Man, went through all the tutorial stuff, went through the story stuff, and then all of a sudden they're like, okay, and now the world is unlocked for you. And I immediately turned it off. And I was like, I'll get to that now when I have time, basically. And I never got back to it.
Too intimidating.
So, yeah, it's just too much. And so now I'm of the thought with Spider-Man 2, I'm like, oh, I hope it comes to PC, because maybe by then I'll play through the first two, you know, like that and Miles Morales, you know. And so I'm just not ready for it yet, but I'm very patient. And so I'm willing to wait if it does come to PC.
I haven't been playing it, but I ended up reinstalling Spider-Man, like the first one, on my PS5, because it's part of their Game Pass. I can never remember what it is. PS Plus. It's part of PS Plus. So I don't have to buy it. I don't have to buy Miles Morales. I installed it and I started playing again, and I'm fighting Kingpin right now. So that's like super, super early.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. I probably will still play it on PS5 just because my PC is kind of trash. Like it's showing its age at this point. But I want to play the first one and Miles Morales before, because like it's a story heavy game, right? Like I want to make sure that I get the whole story. And so
I think you should.
I don't feel like I want to start at Spider-Man 2 and then be like, well, I guess I better go to YouTube and find out what happened. So
yeah.
I haven't been playing it either.
There's they have a button that you can press when you're starting the game to get a recap of what was going on, so it can get you up to speed. I did that as well, just to get like a refresher, because I never finished Miles. I never finished Spider-Man 1 either. But both of them, I'm probably going to finish Spider-Man 2 just because I prefer the direction that they're going with it. Like, just from the trailers and stuff, like, I want to get to a certain segment of the thing. We know Venom's in there, right? So I want to get to Venom, at least, is what it really comes down to for me. But yeah, I don't know. I wish that, like, accessibility options are great and all, and I think accessibility is great. But one of the best things about accessibility is that you can turn things on or off. And I think I would like to just have a general option to not show me tutorials. You know, you look at like Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom. One of the best things that I think everyone universally agrees on is like, I didn't know you could do that. The sense of discovery on like different things is part of the joy of the game. And if you just have a tutorial telling you each and everything and like having you like forced to do this thing, it takes away some of the coolness of it and it's more of a chore. I just would rather fail. Like, okay, well, what am I supposed to do here? And I'd rather have a tooltip show up or something. I don't know. That's my sense of how things are. I much preferred how Breath of the Wild handled things tutorial-wise. You look at, like, Dark Souls and everyone loving Dark Souls. They kind of don't hold your hand. They're just like, figure it out. Go out there and figure things out. And it's a very old-school mentality, but I still think that some of the best games that are, like, Gotti tier are all the ones that don't have big tutorials.
I have one more thing I want to say about Spider-Man, but I want to follow up on that. There's a game, I'm sure, Carrie, you may have had a chance to play it, but I'm sure most people didn't. Mosalina is out right now. It's a small indie puzzle game, and it gives you almost no instructions, and it's the best for that. So like basically you have to get like the MacGuffins in the level. It's like a single screen puzzle platformer thing. You have to get the MacGuffins and you have to make it back to the goal. That's the game. And they give you these tools. But the thing is, the tools are randomized. So you may get the gun that shoots out like an elevator, or you may get the gun that shoots out these little platforms, or you may get the gun that shoots out these long platforms that are really unstable, and it's all like physics based. And the weapons you get, or the tools you get, and the level you get may not match each other. So it is possible that you end up in a scenario where you can't finish the level.
And it doesn't tell you that.
But the thing is, it's really low stakes. Like you'll you have like, it's going to take you like 30 seconds to try, basically 30 to 60 seconds to try. And it's going to start you on the next level immediately. Whatever the next level is going to randomly generate it. So it's really low stakes. And then that feeling you get when you thought it was impossible and you do it anyway, like that feels really good. So it sounds more miserable than it is. I would recommend giving it a try. But yeah, it's really strange.
What's the name of it called again?
It's Mosalina. So like Mona Lisa, except the letters are transposed. Yeah.
There's have you guys heard of Frog Fractions?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Frog Fractions is a game that I would recommend you guys play. And it's along the same lines. The developer really has a sense of when we were all kids growing up, and it was almost like that schoolyard talk of you didn't know if people were bullshitting you or not, or like BSing you or not, or you know, just kind of, you couldn't know if something was going to happen, so you'd go home and try it later on. So you'd have this...
Unlock Akuma.
Yeah, yeah, or...
Mortal Kombat.
Guile's handcuff ability.
Combo, yeah.
So there's that type of thing where Frog Fractions has that, where you play it, and it's like, well, this is a very simple game, and then all of a sudden, it goes off the deep end real fast, and then you're experiencing the game, and it's one of those games, much like Dark Souls, is... where if you go on the internet to learn how to play the game, you are actually doing a disservice to yourself, because you are not giving yourself the chance to learn what the game is trying to like convey to you. So there's an interesting idea there, which I really love, is that finding things your own are like where the fun of the game is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get a similar feeling with Braid back in the day, like on the PS3 when I played that one, because it gives you a little bit of tutorial, and then it's like, okay, we're gonna step it up, and you need to step it up now too, and we're not gonna tell you how, basically. And so I really enjoyed that aspect of Braid, because it was frustrating for me sometimes, but when I would actually get it, I would be like, oh, that's awesome. And like, I gotta remember how I did that, because I'll never be able to do that again. You know, I really like that feeling.
Yeah, that was really good. By the way, that's the last thing I wanted to say about Spider-Man was, I have a friend that is really enjoying it, and he said, and this is something I'm going to do because this is my kind of jam, he said, for extra challenge, I recommend putting fall, like, enabling fall damage and taking off all the auto-swinging stuff. So you're just, if you fall from large heights because you can't manage the swinging, you just die. You know, kick the bucket.
I saw a video of somebody who had turned off the auto swing, the swing assistance or something.
Yeah.
And they smacked into the side of a building real hard and died.
I love it.
It was very funny.
Yeah. So I'm at least going to try that. If it doesn't work for me, if I'm not into it, then I'm not into it. But that sounds like something I have to try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real quick, I'm just going to go ahead, Carrie.
Oh, no, the only thing I was going to say is that the best thing I think about for Spider-Man 2 for me has been that it's been a great palate cleanser, because it's been the exact opposite of what Starfield was. Starfield was like, felt like everything was loading, so you're just loading everywhere constantly, and the sense of progression, how fast things are in Spider-Man 2, have been refreshing compared against that. So that's the only thing I wanted to say.
Which is good, because I guess the game's... People get mad about this, but it's only 20 hours. I'm like, that sounds fine to me. Doesn't bother me.
That's even beautiful. More than enough. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on and talk about the... Russ, I thought of you as soon as I saw this thing. I'm hyped for it because the N64 is one of my favorite systems of all time. But I know this is going to be too expensive. The Analog 3D... first off, you were probably relieved that it wasn't another analog pocket with like stickers on it or something. Exactly. It's something new. What was your reaction to the Analog 3D? And actually, before you give your reaction, tell people what this thing is.
Yeah, so it's a new console they're working on. They say it's going to come out in 2024. They're just showing like really shadowy images, so we can't really see what it is yet. You know, they are making a new controller for it too, but it is focused on Nintendo 64. Initially, when I saw it, I was like, oh, great. This will be a nice home console FPGA. We'll be able to use like the analog OS, like software, open FPGA, to be able to play other games on it too. And so it'll be like basically a home consoleized Mister that has all of the configuration set up. And I was like, that sounds great. Super Nintendo, you know, Nintendo games, and then also Nintendo 64, that'd be awesome. And then I read the fine print, which is in a gray font on a black background, so you can barely see it. And they say it will only play cartridges We're not going to be playing ROMs. It's not going to support OpenFPGA. And so I'm like, I'm not going to pay, because this thing is going to be expensive. It's probably $400 or $500. And I'm like, I'm not paying that much to just be able to have HDMI out on a Nintendo 64.
He's ruined my day.
Sorry.
I didn't read that fine print.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, it's got 4K output on the HDMI. It's probably going to look pretty good. Right?
Not Nintendo 64
because
games.
Those polygons are still going to look bad.
Yeah, exactly. And so,
and if it's FPGA, then there's not going to be any like widescreen hacking, right? Like that's
I don't think so. I don't know enough to know what they've done with the Mr. Core, because they're working on Mr. Core for it. You know, I've been working on it for a while. I haven't tested it yet. I have a Mr. I still haven't unboxed it, unfortunately. But yeah, I can't imagine they're going to be adding hacks like that, especially because it's not really Analog's MO. They're just like, hey, you can play your game the way it was meant to be played, you know, and that's like it. And so I don't see it. Yeah, unless they have workarounds embedded in it, we find out later that, yeah, you can do OpenFPGA, but you got to press this button or whatever. You know, the little things that they do where they get it hacked, the console hacked or whatever. I'm hoping that that is a factor and that we will have that sometime in the future. But if not, to be honest, the Nintendo 64 catalog is not something for me. It's worth spending that much money on.
Before you mentioned...
Like, well, they did that in with the Analog Pocket, right?
Exactly.
Like, it came out and it was... like you could only do cartridges, and then they did a firmware update and they were like, all right, now you can do your SD card if you want.
Yeah. And so, but the thing is, they didn't ever come out and say with the Analog Pocket that they were not going to support OpenFPGA. That was something they said that they were going to have in it. You know what I mean? And so that's what has me thinking, is that maybe they won't do it, is because they're already from the get-go saying no. I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
I don't know. They're in a weird spot. I'd have to agree with everyone. Like, I've always, when I first saw it, I was like, how much is this thing going to be? Mm. And I don't know. I mean, it's really cool and all, but there's that that new RetroTINK 5K, 5X,
right?
Which is using that new FPGA that is looking fantastic with putting old consoles in and then upscaling. And it's looking fantastic. And I keep on seeing updates and where the dude is like having it auto detect, so no one has to really even go into profiles and stuff to like change it is.
Mm-hmm.
So he showed it working on Symphony of the Night on PS1 and how it auto detected it. And I was like, dude, this thing is looking fantastic, more and more better by the day. So it's like, I'm looking at that and I'm like, man, with just a super nice OLED, you don't need CRT. You can just have this. And I already have a really nice OLED. So this is already like ticking all the boxes for me, where I might just get the new RetroTINK. The new Analog 64 thing, I'll wait and see. I have like 60 N64 games, like physical N64 games. And I also have the EverDrive 64. I actually have my N64 plugged in over there. What's funny is my son just recently started playing Super Mario 64. Whenever I say anything's really cool, even when he was a little kid, anything I said was cool was not cool. And what YouTuber he liked said was cool, he would do it. And then he saw like the Super Mario reverse jump, whatever that's called, up the steps and stuff. And he's like, oh, I got to do that. So I put in my Super Mario 64 cart, and it still has all my saves still working. So I did 120 stars on two different profiles, and I was like, oh, yeah, I got my 120 stars on both of them. And he looked at me, he was like, and I was like, that's right, gamer cred.
That's right.
I was like, I did that when I was your age. So then he started playing through it, so I have my original N64 still hooked up with my original Super Mario 64 cartridge in it. So... I was huge on Super Mario, this 64, the N64. So, in one part, I'm really happy for it, but I don't really like the direction that Analog has done with anything that they've been doing. I still don't own anything that they've never made. I do like the idea of FPGAs in general, but there's still something that needs to be programmed, right? So there are still some things that they borrow from other stuff, and you still have some not hardware specific things that should be happening. So there's errors that still happen, and they patch them up and stuff. So I still love the idea of an FPGA, insofar as like, you don't care about frequency or anything, right? You're basically trying to make it operate like a Super Nintendo or operate like an Amiga. So it does one Amiga operation per second, or it does one Super Nintendo operation per second when you switch it up. which is really awesome. But then again, that retro tank, the new retro tank, I think is something I care about a little bit more. Yeah.
One thing I was confused by with the analog is that everybody seems excited about the controller. And I thought, like, I thought we came back around. I thought the Trident controller was the way to go. Are people not into the Trident controller again? Has it swung back? What happened?
Well, this one's in a shadow, so there's that. I think
you can only see the face buttons. Yeah.
It looks to me like they're partnering with 8-Bit-Do.
Yep.
Because if you look at it, you can see just barely, and I should put this on screen, but you can just barely see the 8-Bit-Do little heart thing.
Right.
If you're looking carefully, just to the, like right at the middle, you can just barely see that little 8-Bit-Do heart. Now, I don't follow enough 8-Bit-Do stuff to know whether or not this is an existing controller, but I think it looks fantastic. And
so there's a connection between them too. So the CEO of Analog, like if you go to his website, it says marketing director, marketing lead of 8-Bit-Do. I don't know if that's previous or present or whatever, but they've got a connection between the two of them.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
And if you get the Analog Pocket dock, like it specifically like has compatibility with 8-Bit-Do controllers. Like they have them listed out which ones they support. So there is definitely some sort of partnership going on there, I think.
The reason I'm interested in this mostly is because I don't have to deal with configuring Jack. I've run into so many issues where, like, I bought the 8-Bit-Do Sega Mega Drive controller and I have a Super Nintendo style controller, and my emulation system is like, I don't know what to do with these things unless I reconfigure it every single time. And if you've ever tried dealing with an N64 controller to get that authentic feeling experience, it's always kind of a nightmare because it had such a weird face button layout. So, like, this means that I can just plug it in, put in my copy of Blast Corps or whatever, and play, and that's going to be really, really fun. But the fact that it only plays cartridges and is going to be stupidly expensive, because, like, paying $250 to play your Game Boy games is ridiculous. I'm sure that's high build quality. I haven't had it in my hands, but is it $250 worth of build quality? I don't know. So who knows how much this thing's going to cost. It looks cool though, and that's why I'm excited about it, because I like to get excited about stuff.
For sure.
Speaking real quick, this is like nothing to do with anything, but did any of you guys, when you were kids, take the Trident controller and pretend you were Wolverine?
Just like, I love that, but no, I never did that. But
I used to put it like right here, and like, oh yeah, chunky.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say I've never held a Nintendo 64 controller. I missed that whole generation, so I've never actually played it. I've only played emulation on it. Yeah.
Were you out of the generation entirely, or like were you into PS1?
I had a little
like
bit. Like I had a friend who had PS1. Girls. Yeah, but it was all girls and sports at the time. And so I had a friend with PS1. We played some of the games on that, but that was it. I didn't play any of the other stuff. Never even touched Nintendo 64.
Yep.
It's a terrible controller. I don't know whoever thought it was a good idea. But it led to so many innovations that were important that I'm glad that it exists, even though I hope we never revisit that ridiculous thing again, because it was bad.
Yeah, that's fair. The Rumble Pack came out with it. The analog stick. It did a number of things that were really important, and that still carried on forward.
We give the credit to Alien, but it had dual analog for GoldenEye.
Right.
If you use that scheme. Yeah. So there's that
something
too.
I learned a long time later.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I never played that in the moment where with the two. For those of you who are watching this who have no idea, you could play a first person shooter, GoldenEye 007, with two N64 controllers, one in each hand, and each one had one trigger and each one had a thumbstick, and it was like having two trigger or two thumbsticks on a controller. I don't know anybody in real life that ever actually did that.
Didn't know it was possible. Yeah.
You couldn't.
Or maybe you couldn't. Maybe it's one of those things like you guys were talking about, like unlocking Akuma.
Right.
Well, I was actually huge on the N64. There was an import shop that was really close to where I lived, and they, because Japanese N64 came out like a year early, I got a chance to play Super Mario 64 like a year early, like not too much, but I was waiting. And then Blockbuster had an N64 in their kiosk thing like 6 months before, and I would go there all the time to play it. I was huge on the N64, even though it only had two games when it first came out for like ever.
You guys might know, I had a VHS. Was that from Nintendo Power? I had a VHS for Mario 64, like before the Nintendo 64 was out, and it was just like a demonstration of the game, like to get me excited. And there was like a wireframe of the controller on the box of the VHS. It was amazing. I have no idea where I got that from.
Even though I was more of a Nintendo head during the Sega Nintendo generation, I never subscribed to Nintendo Power. I was always Game Pro and EGN.
Oh.
That was it. That was all the magazines I ever had.
Yeah. I've got to find out what this tape is. When I Google it, it's just rare Mario 64 tape worth lots of money, and you made a mistake throwing that out.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And now everybody tries to keep everything in case it retains its value, but because everybody does that, it never gets that value.
Right.
All right, well, we're coming up on the end of October, and I don't know off the top of my head if there's other huge releases coming this year, but Alan Wake 2 has got to be, I think it might be like the last big release of the year. I don't know who else is interested in that game. I know that I am. But I don't want to talk too much about that particular game, but it's spooky season. My wife gets mad at me when I say spooky season, but I think it's fun to say that. And I was wondering, what are your favorite horror games? Like, what are the games that you love to play to get scared? Russ?
So Resident Evil 4. Yeah, still the original one. Like, I played that earlier through this year on my Steam Deck, and it's not that it's my favorite. It's just the one that I can tolerate because I am such a wuss with those games, you know. And so there's a Steam Pals episode coming out at the end of this month where I think, you know, we'll talk about like what our scariest games are, and that's going to be mine. And it's funny, but for the testing, and like, I filmed some of that earlier this week, I played through the game, you know, just a little bit again. And then I was like, let me boot up the remake, you know, the demo, and just play through that. And I noped right out. Like, I got to the first encounter. I'm like, no, never doing this. And so I love that there's a demo because it saved me $60. But yeah, Resident Evil 4 is what I love.
And that's like the least scary of the Resident Evil games, is from what I hear. Because
correct.
Like, yeah. Seven scarred me for life. Mm. And 8... I didn't get very far in, but yeah. I did enjoy what I did, but 7 was insane. Yeah. How scary that game was.
I would say that Carrie, 5 is less scary.
I never played that one.
Because it's in the daylight, and you can walk and shoot. So
yeah, dude, you're punching a boulder at the end. It's like, it's just an action game.
Yeah,
I still like Resident Evil 5. Speaking of the Steam Pals thing, the game that I'm actually picking, which probably I'll spoil now, is Condemned, the Sega one. If you've never played Condemned, the PC build of it is kind of rough. You really need to play with a mouse and keyboard. The Steam input stuff to try to map the stuff to it, because it was only made for mouse and keyboard, so to get that working on controls is rough. So you're almost better off, unfortunately, having like an Xbox so that you can emulate the 360 version, which does work. And that is such a good supernatural, if you've ever seen the movie Seven, it has that feel. So you're like a detective, and there's just really crazy stuff going on. You have like a black light thing, so you're like discovering stuff. So you're uncovering scenes, like murder scenes, and like really spooky stuff is happening around you. There's one part of the scene that freaked me the F out when I was playing it. So you're in a mall, and there's just mannequins all around.
Oh, I hate that.
As you're walking, you turn around, and the mannequins phalanx around you. Mm-hmm. You don't notice it unless you turn around, but they're like right in front of your face when you turn around. It's like, oh, jeez. Wow. So yeah, Condemned is probably one of my favorite spooky games that doesn't ratchet up the horror part too much, because I think I'm like Russ in a little bit, where like Resident Evil 1 is a spooky game to play, but it's not like uber spooky. when you talk about like Resident Evil 7, I heard a lot of people, or like PT, right? PT was like genuinely freaking me the F out. Like when you like seeing stuff and the stuff that's going around, it was like really ramping it up too much for me. So Condemned, I think, is a nice balance.
Are you, Rich? Are you into the scary games?
I wouldn't say I'm into them, but I do have a few. Like Condemned reminds me of Fear in that way. Oh, yeah. There's some like unnerving bits in Fear, so that's a good one. But I have to go to Silent Hill, the first one on PlayStation 1, with that good old fog. That fog really, the fog and the radio really carried the atmosphere in that game, where you would just hear the static on the radio, and you don't know where the noise is coming from and where the threat is coming from, but you knew something was nearby. So that was really good. I enjoyed that atmosphere.
For me, I thought I was going to be the big coward of the panel, and it turns out that I'm not, because like I have two scary games that I really like, and I would consider them both to be pretty low on the spooky factor, but really high on like the, well, one of them is really high on the jump scare factor, and the other one's very high on the creepy factor, but neither of them are gross, because I don't like gross. So the one that I think is probably my favorite scary game of all time, and it's going to be the one that I submit to Steam Pals, and thank you for reminding me of that, because I forgot. and that's going to be Alien Isolation. That game is unbelievably good as far as like nailing the atmosphere of the Alien movie. And like you play as Ripley's daughter, who's out there looking for Ripley after the Nostromo is found. So you're out there looking for her, and you're on this big space station, and spoilers, there's an alien on there too. And this thing, like, it's essentially, it's unkillable. Like you can't kill it. You don't have weapons, so you have to hide from it. And they're like, it's a space station, so there's ducts and like tunnels and stuff that it can travel through, and you have to travel through sometimes. And on top of that, there's a bunch of people who are all like just like turning on each other, and there's a bunch of androids that want to kill you if you don't like follow their instructions right away. So like everything wants to kill you all the time, and you're best defense is like building these noisemakers so that if the alien comes after you, you can throw that in like the in the general direction of some other people, and the alien will go kill them instead of you. And then you can like hide under stuff or hide in lockers, and the alien will be like walking around the room, and you can see its feet walking around the room as you're hiding underneath a thing, or you're hiding in a locker and you're looking through the slots of the locker, and it'll come right up to the locker and like give a sniff, and you have to hold your breath. So like you have to hold a button, and if you hold your breath for too long, like your character will panic or whatever. So like it comes up to the grate of the locker, and you're holding your breath trying not to get found, and it's such a great experience. I feel like even people who don't like horror games would like this game. It's fantastic. The other game that I want to recommend is Guilt. It's not currently available on anything. It was on Stadia. It was really good. You play as this little girl looking for her cousin or something, and you're like in this weird world where like there's weird creepy things, and there's no gore.
It did come to Steam.
Oh, it did. It's out now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, okay. So how much is it? Do you know?
$19.99.
Okay. It's worth it. It's such a good game. It's really short, but it's really, really good, especially if you like the idea of stuff that's a little spooky, but not gross or gory in any way. And Carrie, you reminded me of it when you mentioned I think it was Carrie that mentioned the mannequins.
Yep.
In that one game, like there's like these weird doll people in that game, and they're really creepy. But I figured this time of year people are always talking about scary games, so I wanted to mention that. Anything else from you guys about spooky games?
when you talk about Alien Isolation, there is a game that I played briefly but then stopped because it was just too much for me. It's called Amnesia. I think the first one was Dark Descent.
I finished that game, and yes. Yeah.
There, so, like, there's things like that, but it was, like, preying on all the things that was, like, even worse for me. So it's, like, you had to, like, run from this guy, and you had to, like, click and drag to open up the door and click to, like, drag to close it. But it also did a thing where you had to hide, but you had to hide, and if you saw the thing that was trying to kill you, you'd go even more insane. So you had to, like, hide and look at the wall and just hear it. And you're just like, oh, my God. Yeah, that was a game that was too much for me. I was like, no, I can't be messing with this.
I did want to share, did you guys ever play Eternal Darkness?
Oh yeah.
GameCube. Mm-hmm. That was a game where I just have a funny memory about it, but me and my two best friends at the time, this was just kind of later in the GameCube era. I think we were already like moving on to other stuff, like the Xbox 360 era. But we were like, let's get the GameCube out. Let's get this game on Gamefly, and then we're going to play it, and we're just going to dedicate a whole day to it. And we were here in Hawaii. We, like, blacked out all the curtains, so it was dark in the room, and we met up at 8 a.m. We're like, we're just going to play it all day. That's all we're going to do, because we hear all these great things about this being this sleeper hit or whatever. And we got an hour into it, and we're like, no, this is so dumb. And so we never played that game. Apparently, it's supposed to get pretty good, you know, near the end game, where you, like, get this feeling where you're going insane or whatever. We never got that far. We had all these ambitions. You know, we had our, like, Cheetos out and our Mountain Dew. And we were just going to play through the whole game, and we did it all. It's pretty funny.
That's hilarious. Awesome.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of The Nerd Nest. But if you're looking for more, like, if you're like, hey, I kind of enjoyed this conversation and I want to hear more of this conversation, you should check out the Patreon. Before we started recording this episode, we had, like, a whole bunch of extra stuff that we talked about, and you can find that over at patreon.com/nerdnest. It's the Patreon for this podcast, and hope to see you guys over there. This is the first time that we're doing, like, that bonus content, but that's something that hopefully we're going to continue to do in the future. And if you haven't already checked out all of these guys' channels, make sure that you do. Carrie, what's your next video that you got coming out?
It's still the same one that I was supposed to do last week. It's just that timing has been really brutal for me lately. So I am still looking to finish up today B-Link's SCR7, which is their latest SBC single board. Well, it's a little NUC. It's really nice, and I'm going to be finishing that up, and that's going to be hopefully for tomorrow.
All right. Russ, what's next for you?
I'm working on this little handheld called the M17. It looks like a little Nintendo Switch, kind of, but it's cheap. It's like $50. But the thing about it is it's super sturdy, and it has a physical on-off switch, which is not very common in a lot of these emulators and stuff. So I think it's actually going to be a really great device for kids. And so I'm going to finish up that video today, probably have it out tomorrow. And so I think that'll be an interesting one that you could maybe get and, you know, fix up for your kid and then give it as a gift kind of thing.
Can't go wrong for $50. Rich, what's your next video?
I just wrapped my Aya Neo Kun review, so hopefully that should be available tomorrow. I got to work on the thumbnail, things like that. But yeah, should be ready tomorrow, or I guess today if we're... Are you launching this on Monday?
Well, we'll see. I got a lot of editing to do to see.
Yeah, we missed you.
The pre-show, we talked a lot of stuff. So I got a lot of work to do. But we'll see when this comes out. Make sure that you check
out. My review should be there.
Yeah, make sure you check out Fan the Deck, Retro Game Core, and The Fox on YouTube. There's links down below if you're watching this on the YouTube channel. And if you're listening to this in your favorite podcast player, do us a favor and click on the 5 stars for whatever it is that you use, because it really does help out. From the Nerd Nest, stay awesome, everybody. Mm-hmm.